Okay, Mitsuyam, here we go. We're continuing with our scene in Daniel. Remember, we had about a 10-minute tangent to Megillat Esther, but you're going to continue to see numerous, I would say, associations between them. But just to be accurate here, in terms of the storm, the associations are between Esther and Daniel, and not Daniel and Esther. What do I mean by that? Esther. Esther knows Daniel. Daniel doesn't know Esther. Meaning the associations are between Esther and Daniel. I mean, the authors of Esther associated the Sefer with Daniel. Daniel can't be associated with Esther because it didn't happen yet. Mitsuyan. And so when you think, oh my gosh, it's just like a Megillat Esther, that's the wrong way to phrase it. Rather, when you get to Megillat Esther, you have to say, just like in Daniel. Mitsuyan, and we already discussed, remembers what's the reason why Mordechai and Esther are going to associate the story of Esther so much with Daniel and with Yosef. Remember the Sarah Mashkim, Sarah Ofin, Biktan Teresh, Pat Bag, Hamelech. Why was that?
Living in like a assimilated...
Beautiful. To show you, again, what happens to Jews in an assimilated environment, we have numerous parallels between them, both in terms of the crises that happen to everyone there, but also the possibility of Jews succeeding in an assimilated diasporan environment. Even the stories of success, like Daniel, and like Mordechai and Esther, and like Yosef, how did they end? Even the successful stories, all end how? Happily ever after? How did Yosef story end? See the beginning of Galut Mitzrayim, the worst Galut that we experienced. How does the story of Daniel end? You're supposed to say, I don't know yet. But it will end with persecution. How does the story of Esther end? There are still second-class citizens that are being taxed. I don't know about you, even as I say this, I get a little nervous. Why? Because all the stories of Jewish success in Chutz La'aretz end with persecution. Okay. With this, let's take a look now. Back to Perek Aleph. And now we're going to see just how significant the initial stage is. Remember, we discussed how Nebuchadnezzar is going to be looking for the sake of assimilation and also bringing the best and the brightest so that Babylonia can be transformed into a hubbub of intellect and theology and technology and industry. He looks around not just from the Jews, but basically from all the peoples that he's conquered, but the Jewish people included. They have to be good-looking, extremely talented, extremely brilliant, know numerous languages, be from, again, the monarchical homes, again, basically very well-bred families. And this is exactly what we're going to see over here. Who's chosen amongst them? Daniel. Giving you the impression, by the way, that these are young children. Like, about how old are we talking about? Probably before they exhibit signs of puberty, which would be around when?
11.
Okay, let's say like up to 13, which means that you can have anywhere from like a 5-year-old to a 13-year-old. Exactly how old Daniel here is, we don't know. Anyone, though, if you can remember this for a moment, remember what words repeat themselves a lot in Megillat Esther? If I would ask you who are the main characters in Megillat Esther, you would definitely say Mordechai, Esther, Haman, Bar-Nessus, the primary, and Ahasuerus. As a matter of fact, out of all these four, anyone knows who appears in the most scenes? Achashverosh. Yefeh. Okay, next. Hua, I would say after these four main characters, but the truth is that more times than the names of these four characters appears, there's another general name that appears. We began to discuss this last week also. Who are these? Then we have all the different names of all the different officers. Most of the officers are called what? Not Sarei Hamelech, but rather Sarisim. Right? If you paid attention to this while you were reading Megillat Esther, Sarisim, 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 they're like Sarisim all over the place. And we discuss what's a Saris? A eunuch, right? Someone who's castrated, which by the way is an Isser d'Oraisa, right? You're not allowed to castrate. We discuss the fact that these are probably people from the lower classes. For what? The only way for them to survive is to become a servant of the king. Why is it that the servants of the king, not the officers of the king, why is it that the servants of the king had to be castrated? So they don't sleep with the king's wives and pilakshim. Yafeh, number two.
See, that's their only focus.
Very nice. Again, to show that they're completely devoted, no family life. Excellent. Number three. Also, no, the king doesn't have to fear any of these servants rebelling because he won't have any heir. Again, it will be a very short-lived kingship of whatever he does. So, definitely. And in the case of Daniel, our sense is that what probably happened then to these young children? They were probably castrated. Our sense is yes. Even though, by the way, remember we said it, that Chazal even say yes. Chazal say, Daniel is Harvona. Daniel is Hatach. What do they both have in Haman? They're both eunuchs, they're both Sarisim. And notice that we don't have any children mentioned of Daniel. And why isn't Daniel, when he's writing this, just come out and say, we were castrated. Very nice, meaning it would portray him, even though he was forced into the situation, we would already look at Daniel, oh my gosh, you're a sadist, right? And rather, you're supposed to like pick it up from just the genre of this time period, you're supposed to realize, oh my gosh, like instead of saying, oh my gosh, right, you're a sadist, you're supposed to say, oh, you were probably castrated when you were taken into the king's palace. Isn't that sad? Yes, you're supposed to say it's very sad. Okay, now let's continue. Okay, now let's look at Pasuk Gimel. He told Ashpenaz, doesn't this even sound like the names of Megillat Esther? Rav Sarisav, Lavim in Meisrom, Mizarim Lucham, Min HaPartimim, Yiladim Asher Im Behem Kolmum, Tovei Marim, Maskilim Lachokma, Yodei Dat, Mivinim, Bandav Asher Koch Behem, Lamol Bechal HaMelech, Ulam Dam Sefer Lashon Kastim. And they're going to be assimilated, they're going to be taught particularly the Babylonian culture and the Babylonian language. This is what we got up to, Pasuk Hei, Vayiman Lehem HaMelech, Tvayom B'yomo, the king established the menu on his own. What would he give them? Even though they were technically, if you think about it, they were slaves to the king, but he gave them pat bad hamelech, we said the choices of the breads of the king, umiyeh mishtav, from his own wine menu, ulegadlam shanim shalosh, umiktatam. And what would he do? How long would they be in training for? 3 years, ulegadlam shanim shalosh. I mean, the goal was to basically give them this, we'll call it tutorialship, again, for 3 years. And what does it mean, umiktatam? So this is a machloket amongst the parshanim. Does it mean three and some, or shalosh umiktatam? Then not all of them would actually survive the 3 years. Who would survive the 3 years? Only? Very nice. Meaning, what does this remind you of, by the way? Again, I told you not to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. Again, I'm sorry about this. This reminds you of, we're going to bring in the most gorgeous and talented of the boys, and we'll see like who makes it through the 3 year competition. There's the beauty contest with Esther. Right, so here it's a little different. I mean, it's almost as if Esther is playing off of this. At least in Daniel, what type of contest was it? Very nice. It is the SATs, right? That okay, only the best and the brightest will survive. In the case of Esther, it was only the prettiest that the king happens to remember her name. Right, meaning it's trying to show you almost the undermining of the culture. Look what's happened in the same culture. And imagine this being put through a three-year tutorial, and only, like I'm trying to think if there are any universities that do this, right? I know the Army does this. They have certain special programs, right? They're called, you know, Modian programs, Ofek, Chavatzelet, and they put you through rigorous training, but not everyone passes at the end, right? The ones who pass, what happens to them? They move on onto government positions and higher up in the army. What happens to the ones who don't pass?
University.
Okay, so like they're like drop out, right? Meaning from the program, or they're not, you know, they didn't decide to drop out, but they're the failures of the program. And who remembers what happens to those who don't make it to the next round of Bikabeta Betulot Sheinit? In Megillat Esther. Very nice. They're pilakshim for life. They're basically put in harem prison, right? And they can't leave the palatial walls. Basically, they are
prisoners
of the king. What do you think happens to those little boys who don't make it through the rigorous program? Very nice. They probably become like regular servants. That's right. Meaning also prisoners of the king to a certain degree. So let's continue over here. Just so you should see, how's Daniel starting off? Are we in a positive note?
No,
we don't like this so much. Pasuk Vav, Vayhi Bahem Ibnei Yehuda, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. Amongst those who were taken from Yehuda are these four. And obviously, this is a literary method of showing you. There were many others, but these are the four that you're going to continue to hear about. Vayasem Lehem Shara Sarisim Shimot. And he gives everyone new Babylonian names. Vayasem Le Daniel, he's going to name Daniel Belshazzar. What does that already tell you about the name Belshazzar? It's not a personal name, it's
A title name,
Yefem Ma'od, or a dignitary name. Ula Hananiah, he calls Shadrach, Mishael, he calls Meshach, and Azariah is going to be called Avednego. Vayesim Daniel Alnego, Asher lo yitka'al v'pat bag hamelech. And Daniel decided amongst himself. What does that already tell you about Daniel amongst his friends?
He's
the leader. That's right. And once he decides a certain conviction, right, or that he's going to stand on principle, what happens? They all decide as well. But notice that Daniel took this upon himself, that he didn't want to be mitzgael, again, the patzvat hamelech. What does that mean, mitzgael? He didn't want to defile himself through the patzvat of the melech. Now, anyone remember, what's the halacha Right? If I don't have anything to eat other than something not kosher, is this a situation of Yerek Ve'al Yavor?
No.
No. So what is Daniel doing? Why is he putting his life in danger by refusing to defile himself? You tell me, why doesn't he want to eat Patbak HaMelech and Yeh Mishtav? It's not kosher. Now, the truth is that, I don't know if it's not kosher. For all we know, it's a baguette, right? What can not be kosher? And the wine, okay, probably isn't Yeh Akum in the sense that it's not actually used for Avodah Zarah, but, again, still problematic. Why is it that he doesn't want to eat from it?
He, like, realized he had to be a leader, and he, like, took that role upon himself, and if he didn't, maybe like other things people would have started
with violating. Very nice. So not so much I would say as the leader, and as much as he realized that once he starts eating Babylonian food, what happens?
Oh yeah.
It leads to, if you eat with the Babylonians, then you talk like the Babylonians, then you act like the Babylonians. Right? Isn't that interesting that there are so many gezeirot of Chazal specifically on eating, even if they're not to Oraisa? For example, and pat palter, right? What's pat palter? Regular bread that today we're allowed to eat because we believe that there's nothing not kosher, but and standard bread. Why is initially, right? You're not allowed to eat with an akum. Why? Because you never know, right? You could have added something not kosher to it. Or we even say you shouldn't drink with, again, even yein akum right now, or stam yeinam. Right? Yein akum would be wine that was actually used for Avodah Zarah. But I know my business partner is an atheist, so why can't I go out and have a drink with him at the bar? You know the salacha? You're not allowed to drink even stam yeinam, right? A gezeira of Chazal. I can't drink wine from the wine of a goy, even if there's nothing non-kosher in it. Why not?
Because it, like, encourages interaction.
Beautiful. Because if I drink with the goy, then I'm going to become drunk with the goy, and I don't want to think about what can happen. Right, so you're not allowed to drink with a goy, so Chazal said, don't ever drink the goy, the wine of a goy. You can only drink your own wine. And so what do we have? You have to have that. Very nice. Again, it has to be mevushal, which means that it's a lower quality wine generally, even though Baruch Hashem in Eretz Yisrael today, even the best of the wines, are they mevushal?
Yeah.
No.
No.
Sorry. Meaning in Israel, they're not.
Yeah.
And but I can drink. I can finally drink delicious gourmet wines. Why?
Because
they're made by a Jew. And again, if the waiter is a Jew, or if I open it up myself, but let's say I have a gourmet wine in Israel, and the Arab waiter opens it up for me. Guess what?
Can't
drink it. There goes my $150 wine bottle down the drain. So I said, unless it's mevushal. If it's mevushal, it's a lower level wine. It's really not as good. In which case, and the guy probably doesn't want to drink, and in which case, can I drink that?
Yeah.
With even if a guy opens, yes. Yeah, that's fine, but this case really happened to us. We went to host a Sheva Brachos for a Baal, well, we did this a few times. We hosted for a Baal Tshuva whose father was Christian. Correct. So this is so cool. He's in our house for Shabbos. Like, he didn't know what was going on. The mother, at least, was Jewish. That's why, again, the son is Jewish. But the father, and we realized, though, that came time for Sheva Brachos, and the wine was on the table. We had opened the wine was on the table the whole time. And can we use that wine for Sheva Brachos?
No.
And it wasn't mevushal. And no, you're not even allowed to use it. Why? Because without me looking, what could have happened? He could have poured the wine. Isn't that something? So yes, it was a very complicated case. Then we were like, oh, what should we do? We have to bring a new, it became like very, okay, so we have to bring a new bottle of wine to the table. But he's going to ask, why are you bringing a bottle of wine? We have an open bottle of wine right here. I go, okay, please just don't ask. Don't ask. Because what would I have to tell him? Because you passel the wine. And he'll say, no, I didn't. I didn't even touch it. I know, but you may have touched it. Oh, do you see how awkward this is? Good thing is, someone literally came in. We had other panim chadashos. And someone came in with, I said, Yofi, we'll use your bottle of wine. I took two deep breaths and mitzuyan. Okay, here we go. Sorry, yes, Baruch Hashem. I said a short tefillah right beforehand. Okay, back to this. So Daniel is really making, again, I would say not necessarily because he thinks others are going to follow, but on principle, he doesn't want to drink and eat Goyisha food because he realizes that that's going to be the first step in assimilation. And we see this expressed through the various takanot of Chazal. Note, by the way, that the juxtaposition within the psukim furthers this idea of assimilation. For example, what else is changed right away?
Names.
Their names. Again, does this remind you of anything in Chazal?
In Mitzrayim.
Kol kavod kela. Lo shinu et? Shmotam, et Lishonam, et Bigdam. Right? And Daniel basically accepts upon himself et Machilam, right? That you shouldn't change any of this. As soon as his name is changed, it's almost as if he realizes, okay, I have to take upon a different chumrah on myself, right? Namely, that I'm not going to eat this food. Somewhere between 5 and 13.
That's crazy.
Whoa. Strong young man. Yes. Now, the truth is that, right, it seems that he did this at the beginning of 3 years. Meaning they were graduated, he could be 16, right? It's a 3-year program. But our sense is that he did this from the onset. So, yes, a young man who takes this upon himself. There are all these stories, right, in the Shoah as well, these young children who, you know, even if they were in Christian orphanages, they would still say Shema Yisrael that night, mm-hmm. right? And now we're all thinking of the song. Right? And they would, you know, they would still be Shomer Shabbos, like these 9-year-old boys. You ever hear these stories?
Yeah.
You know, and these girls who would still dab into themselves. Okay, yes, sorry, Daniel. See? I caught myself. Kim.
Also, you said why, is if it's not Yahweh, clearly, it's not a legitimate situation for him if he was able to.
Very nice.
It was an easy run to get around it.
Beautiful. Meaning, he, that's exactly, it wouldn't be, yeah, right? Even if it was non-kosher, that's the only thing that they're serving them. I mean, this is his menu. So if he doesn't eat this, then.
But he's still not dying if he's not eating it.
Apparently, he would be. Or are you ready? We'll see why. Again, it's really a very dangerous situation. And now notice what Daniel does. Again, he's going to manage to maintain his principles over here because he doesn't want to defile himself with the food nor with the wine. So he asked, who does he ask here? He asked the head of the eunuchs. Right? Take a look over here. Pasuk, the end of Pasuk Chet, Vayivakesh Mitzar HaSarisim. Isn't that interesting? Wait, I thought, who's the head of these eunuchs? Ashpenaz, Rav Sarisav. Can anyone tell me what's the difference between Rav Sarisav and Sar Sarisim? Right? Other than it being very alliterative here. What's Rav Sarisav? One of the heads. Very nice. Like high up amongst the eunuchs. What's the Sar Sarisim? He's the head of all of them. So he goes all the way up. What's strange though, if I wanted to ask like special permission for myself, what would I do? Who would I go to? So I go, would I go to the top and draw attention to myself? Mm-hmm. So in the army, for example, there, okay, if you want a special favor, you ask your memen. Then you ask the menpe. If he says no, you go to the katsin. If the katsin says no, then you go to the, what's it called? The mamal. And if the mamal says no, you can go to the ramatkal. Right? Do you see this? There's a system. Why doesn't he even venture to go to Ashpenaz? What does that already tell you?
He's close to his
kid. Hey, nice. What does this remind you of? This story really does remind you of someone who knows Esther. That he... Not the... Okay, so Esther has an in with everyone, but I don't know the Esther story yet. So what story also? Yosef. Remember, he knew the Rav of basically the head of the Beit HaSoar. So to here, he has a special relationship with the Sar Sarisim, and who gave him these names. How do you know that? Because Belshazzar is, really means the most dignified. So by giving Daniel Belshazzar, what does Daniel realize?
He likes me.
That's right. So Daniel then goes to Sar Sarisim and asks him as follows. Right, he says, please, I don't want to defile myself with this food. Vayitein halukim et Daniel l'chesed ul'rachamim. Yes, in Megillat Esther, it's going to remind you of chein v'chesed l'fanav, right? Lefnei Sar HaSarisim. Vayomar Sar HaSarisim l'Daniel yarei ani et Adoni HaMelech. Now I know that this person is very high up because he has to report back to the king. What does the head of the eunuchs tell him? I'm afraid, now we're going to see, Yael, why it really was sakanas nefashos for him not to eat this food. He says, I'm afraid to ask, and to ask this of the king, asher mina et malchachem et mishtechem, because he's personally overseeing your diet. Asher lama yirei pnechem zoafim min hayaladim asher kigilchem. He says, and what's going to happen? If you don't eat this, then he's going to notice that you don't look as good as your parallel age friends, the chiyatim et roshi lamelech, who's he going to hold accountable? Nice, he's going to notice, for example, that you're losing weight. You're going to look emaciated. Who's held responsible?
Me.
So notice, Daniel is willing to starve himself, right? And the Sarisim, Sar HaSarisim says, yeah, but my life is in danger. And what does this tell you again about the culture? They're all, again, he's acting in his self-interest. Daniel el hamaltzar asher mina sar sarisim al Daniel chaneni mishal vazaria. So Daniel then goes to a lowly servant, to the actual waiter who served the foods, And he says as follows, Nasna et avadacha yamim asara. For the next 10 days, v'yitznu lanu min hazeroim v'nochla umayim v'nishte. What does he ask the waiter to do? Very nice. Instead of giving us the fancy foods, give us just seeds. Right? Meaning we're going vegetarian. No, even better. We're going
vegan.
That's what I said. We're going vegan for the next 10 days. Now, can anyone tell me why he went all the way higher from the Sarasarisim? Basically, what was he hoping the Sarasarisim would tell him? He says, I don't want to define myself with this king. He was hoping that the Sarasarisim would obviously do what? Would ask the king for a special menu for him. What does Sarasarisim say?
No,
right? You're putting my life in danger. So Daniel goes to the lowliest of the low. Who does he go to now?
Waiter.
The Meltzar. He goes to the waiter. Actually, what does the waiter do? He just gives the food. He says, I'll tell you what. Replace the plates that you give us with seeds. Notice this way, will anyone know? Will the Sarasarisim know? No. Why would the Maltzar do something like this? Thank you. And so basically, Daniel figures out this Babylonian society. Everyone's in this for themselves. He says, if I can tell, this is like working with the capos, you know, where the SS and the capo. If I could, and get this, then you get my amazing portion, right? My regal portion. Will the Maltzar do this?
Yeah,
why not? I'll pick up some seeds from the garden. But notice this. Now, by the way, Yael, why is Daniel really putting his life in danger, even though he doesn't have to? It's not halacha for which...
He's being like
sneaky. If he's going to get caught, by the way, is it easy to get caught changing your diet?
Yeah.
Why?
Because
they're going to look different. And if you go, I'm serious, if you go vegan, even for 10 days, are all of you going to look different?
Yeah.
Yes. I'm serious, this has really been proven. Anyone know about how much weight you're going to lose in 10 days? Going from a bread and wine diet to a sea diet. 10 pounds in 10 days, right? At least.
Yeah.
Will that be seen? By the way, don't worry. Don't try it because you're going to gain it all back as soon as you stop the diet. And that's why Daniel says also, like, enough that hopefully they won't, you know, 10 pounds. Is 10 pounds noticeable on everyone?
Yes.
But hopefully, Daniel's saying, maybe it won't be so noticeable, especially because they've been fattening up these kids. Maybe it won't be so noticeable. We'll see how it goes for 10 days.
And he's just, like, growing.
Sorry?
And when kids grow, they slim out.
Okay, right, so maybe he won't be suspicious. And instead of wine, give us water. By the way, will you notice that? Wine is much more fattening than water, that's for sure, number one. But what's an advantage of drinking water over wine? It's definitely healthier, and very nice. And you'll have a clearer head. You'll be less tired. Isn't that interesting?
They
wanted
to be like smart and like brilliant. Why
would
they like?
It was believed that wine sharpens the brain, and also, it's also good for your heart rate. That's right, and will also, especially if you're smart and motivated, will make you tired. So you'll go to sleep, and then you wake up after wine, feeling much more invigorated and with much more energy. I'm not talking about they didn't get them drunk, you know, so that they could have hangovers, but basic amounts of wine. Also, wine was considered the more fattening, I mean, is a wealthier, tastier, more filling beverage, no question. So now, and he says, and you, watch out for how we look, right? Do we always necessarily notice the differences in how we look over 10 days? Could you tell if you lost 10 pounds in 10 days?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. 10 pounds is a lot.
You would look in the mirror today, and you would look in the mirror in 10 days from now?
I can tell if I lost.
Are you serious?
10 pounds is
really?
A lot. It's
oh.
Like
2 pounds. Very nice. Now, please remember then also that they didn't have... Really? That's amazing. Wow. I can never tell.
I was somewhere, and they handed out...
What? Sorry?
I feel like you have to tell more about how your clothes fit.
Oh, that's right. Exactly. Not necessarily. I don't mean if you're close fit. Thank you. I didn't mean if you're close fit. You're right. Then you know. Right? If your skirt falls down, yes, you've lost weight. But I mean exactly how you look. Now, by the way, please remember they don't have mirrors then. Mirrors are not very commonplace. So who do you ask to like check up on your appearance? The people around. Okay. It's like saying, you know, Evie, let me know like how I look in 10 days from now. You know, and, you know, better, worse, or the same. So that's exactly what they ask. What he asks of the Meltzar, you're going to tell us And we'll see how to proceed from there. By the way, do you think the Sar Sarisim knows about it? Turn back to Pasuk Yud Aleph. And the Miltsar was an appointee, of the Sar HaSarisim. So basically, even if the Sar HaSarisim knows about it, he won't be held directly responsible. Who could they always shift the blame to?
The Miltsar.
So now the Sar HaSarisim seems to be okay with this. And they're going to Vayinasem Yamim Asara. Vayinasem means they're going to try it out for 10 days. And by the way, what is this reminiscent of? 10 days of trying something out, of being extra careful with not eating. Sorry? Asar Yimei Tshuva. Very nice. Chazal actually learned during Asar Yimei Tshuva, you should try to be a little more restraining than usual. Umiksat Yamim Asara. And sure enough, after these 10 days, Nir'em Marehem Tov. How do they look?
Good.
Ubri'ei Basar Min Kol Hayeladim. And they looked? Healthier than all the others. They looked better. Now, does it say that they... It says bari basar generally even means? Fatter, plumper. And so sure enough, the parshanim debate this. Some explain that, in fact, this was an ace. Right? It shouldn't have happened, and it did. Can anyone give a different explanation? And today, nutritionists really say, in addition to wine being more satisfying, what else does wine do? It stunts your appetite. If you drink wine, have you ever tried this? You're supposed to say, no, I'm testing you. I'm a spy. Okay, you guys picked it up. There, that's it. If one goes to a restaurant, let's say, and you, firstly, you should never start off drinking wine. Why? If you're hungry, again, you're just going to, again, not feel good from the beginning. If you drink a little and then you drink wine, what sensation do you have? You have a sensation of being very full. So ultimately, you're not going to eat that much. Right? When you're drinking water, though, and the water will satiate you, but will it make you feel super full? Yeah. Are you still going to be hungry after you have water? For sure. Yeah. So it seems as if, even though they're eating the seeds, they're eating more of it. Yeah, no, so that could be a real explanation, not necessarily a miraculous one. So notice, Anna, that here, versus the king's food, we'll call it a generous, nutritious diet. Now, again, we're going to have a less nutritious diet, and yet maybe it's more nutritious in the end. And as we noticed, by the way, I just want to mention one other idea, that the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that Daniel didn't want to eat the pat akum and the oil and the wine, even though we don't have any of these gezeros. The gezeros of pat akum and of yein akum, again, they're all not going to exist during the time, again, that's all the time of the Mishnayos, these gezeros. So the gezerah isn't even there. Right? It's not as if Daniel knew that he was keeping anything. And as a matter of fact, this is the gzeirot against pat and yayin are part of 18 decrees established by Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. So Daniel is very young. So we said, why does Daniel do this? Again, as a way of warding off different temptations. And lo and behold, it worked for him that Daniel stands firm on his principle. And instead of eating from the goyim, again, what do you know? He is going to be able to separate himself entirely. Who does this remind you of also? To like stay away from temptation. Yosef. Very nice. Was able to overcome his temptation as well. I'm sure, by the way, in terms of just taste and basic temptation, what do you think looked better? The king's chalot or the seeds on the plate? That's right. That's okay. Just want to make sure that you see this as well. Again, Pasuk Tzayin. Vayhi ha-motzar noseyet pat baga b'yei mishnehem v'notein lahem zeronim. So now, Daniel's going to explain what happened. He would carry in, meaning how they get away with this, because he would carry in what? The regular portions of pat baga melech and yayin, together with what else would be there on his serving plate, together with the seeds. Vayeladim ha'ele. Now we know that these four of them, so Daniel was the leader, and that's why, ultimately, we're going to see the Sefer is named after him. He's the central character. We're going to see what else is very indicative here of who Daniel is. The four of them, Natan lahem Elokim, Adav Askel, B'chol Sefer Chachma, V'Daniel Hivin, B'chol Chazon, V'Chalamot. That's interesting. Again, they got away with it because it would be brought in with everything. And you should just know that these children ended up being super-duper smart. Adav Askel, B'chol Sefer Chachma, and Daniel even ended up being able, Hevin b'chol chazon v'chalamot, understood visions and dreams. From the juxtaposition, Kala Kavod, Yafe Gabriel, and we already see the Yosef, reminiscence of the Yosef story. No question that this is going to be the secret of one's success in Chutz La'aretz, to be able to understand dreams, because that's a higher form of intelligence. And, interestingly, from the juxtaposition of the psukim, what is it that the author is trying to tell you? Almost because they were eating seeds and not the gayish of food, what happened? They were smarter. This very much supports the Abarbanel, who believes that kosher food is actually healthier for you than non-kosher food. Right? I'm sure you've heard this. Now, is that true?
No.
Some will say yes, and yet the Rambam says that's not true. I don't know. I see plenty of people who eat bacon and they're actually stronger than the rest of us. And so,
bacon
no.
Not good for you. I don't think I'm
right, okay, yeah, they eat. Yeah, remember Rabbi Riskin? Have you met Rabbi Riskin? Have you ever seen Rabbi Riskin? He's relatively short. He would talk about how when he was on the debating team, so he was called up once to like a military academy to debate with people there, and this was in like the 1960s. So he says they had a big dinner, right, at this military academy, and what did they serve them? Beef and like five different types of meats. And he was representing Yeshiva University, so what did they serve them?
Fish.
Nope, it wasn't even that fancy. Then he said they gave them each an apple. And you remember? No. So you remember today, like you go to, I remember my brother who graduated from YMDNJ, the New Jersey Dental School, said that like half the, like they had like three tables, not half, they had three tables of kosher food, and the kosher food was delicious catered kosher food. That didn't happen 40 years ago. You know this? Okay, anyway, so he says, I gave him an apple. He says, but he was so surprised because his grandmother had always told him that you eat kosher food so that you'll grow up to be big and strong. He said, I don't know. You know, you see these military men, they seem to be doing just fine with their non-kosher food. And sure enough, the Rambam says that one has nothing to do with the other. And kosher could be, non-kosher could be healthy as well. And it's true, Shoshana is saying, there are certain foods that you know that definitely aren't healthy today. By the way, isn't that interesting? Like some of the foods, I'm not talking about all the animals, I don't know so much about horse meat, but definitely pig meat, healthy?
No,
much less healthy than cow meat, just as an example. So one idea is the two are juxtaposed to show you because Daniel only ate the legumes over here. The legumes actually make you smarter. By the way, what is interesting about legumes, about zeronim? Any of you read these like nutritional things?
Do you know this? Like
mineral oil, like fish oil. Do you know that legumes in particular, like beans and almonds, like nuts, things like that, they are best for?
Your heart. Memory.
They help prevent Alzheimer's. Like all the studies. Isn't that amazing? So it could be, because the two are linked, maybe eating the zeronim actually did what? Made them smarter. That's number one. Or, what else is it trying to say? Go back to the other parshanut, that it was all miraculous, because they were willing to risk their lives for this chumra of not assimilating. What did Hashem do?
Rewarded
them. So do you see, one is a miraculous explanation, the other is a very natural explanation, just like we offered before.
Could it also be that since they're not drinking wine, they have clearer heads?
Could definitely. Very nice. Yes, and they don't even look emaciated, right? They're actually going to be smarter. And maybe this is even what leads Daniel, even though we see that Daniel is definitely in a separate class. Either because, again, what's the natural explanation? He's just naturally smarter. Excellent. Or what's the more miraculous explanation? Why does he get a better reward than his peers? He was the leader. He was the one who decided, okay, this is what we're going to do. How do I know that he's the one who decided? That's what it says. It says only he said. And then apparently it says, and then our Ba'atam, they ended up following along as we discussed, but ultimately it was really his initiative.
It wasn't like a thing then. It was like something he just did at the desert, right? Like
meaning trying it out for 10 days?
Yeah.
Very nice, but now that they see that. Very nice. It was there, correct. Their chumrah. Isn't that interesting? We're going to see a lot of these discussions going on. Now let's take a look. It seems that graduation day arrived. It's 3 years later, and the king is going to speak. Basically, what is the king going to do? He tests everyone. And who's valedictorian? And who are the salutatorians? Very nice. And Yafeh Hanani Mishael Vazaria. Lo nimsa mikulam ki Daniel Hanani Mishael Vazaria v'emdu lefnei hamelech. And what did he appoint them with? Not only do they survive the course, but they become the king's personal advisors. V'emdu lefnei hamelech. Please turn to Megillat Esther for a moment and tell me, what's the difference between Mishartei Pnei HaMelech versus La'amod B'Pnei HaMelech? It doesn't mean if I serve, I said they become his advisor. Maybe they're his servants. And how do I know that if you stand in front of the king, you're an advisor? Yes, it appears before in Tanakh, even though, and they're juxtaposed, even though Daniel really comes before Esther. Remember, Tunter Perik Aleph, Pasuk Yud. The eunuchs do what? Mishartei Pnei HaMelech. What does it mean that they are Mishartei Pnei HaMelech? They are his closest servants. What does it mean that they are Misharetim? What do? They stand by his side to do what? They're the ones who are like fanning his face in the heat. Right? They're the ones who bathe him in his hot water. Right? Are you picturing this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then take a look at Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayamar Melech HaChachamim, this is after the Vashti incident. Yodei Ha'itim, he turns to his advisors who also know astrology. Kichein Dvar HaMelech Lefnei Kol Yodei Dat Vadin. And these are his, they're the smartest ones. They're also Yodei Dat Vadin. What does it mean? These are his, in Israel we would call today the Yoetz Mishpati. Right? These are his civil advisors, the legal advisors. Var Karov Elav. And who are these advisors? Kashanashi Tard Matat Tarshish, Meres Marsana Mumuchan, Shivat Sarei Paras Madai, Ro'e Pnei HaMelech. So what does that tell you? How is a Ro'e Pnei HaMelech different than a Saris Mishare Pnei HaMelech? In what regard? They don't serve the king, they do what? They counsel the king, they advise the king. These are the smartest people in society. Right? This is the cabinet. Right? They don't actually serve him. Do you see that? So who are Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, Vazari? Are they Mishartei HaMelech? No, they are the Omdei HaMelech, meaning they become the king's advisors. Now I'm sure in the hierarchy of advisors, where are they? Probably on the bottom. Why? Just, again, they're still young. They're not that experienced. And we'll see how significant this is. And as we continue, V'chol dvar chochmat bina, asher bikesh meyem ha-melech, v'yimtzeim eser yadot akol ha-chartumim ha-ashafim. Sure enough, though, any time the king asks for some type of, again, of difficulty in the realm of wisdom, they end up superseding the chartumim and the ashafim. Right? These were the most advanced of the advisors. These are... And what's a Khartoum? Someone who uses sorcery, the magicians, basically the scientists. And who are the Ashafim? The ones who know Kishuf. Right, so they would come up with a solution even better than the more senior members of the king's faculty. What does that have to do with anything? Oh, you should just know, Daniel's going to start off at the onset of Nebuchadnezzar. Remember what year did we say this was? Who remembers?
597.
Very nice, meaning the latest would be 597. We said it could even be 600 to 597, meaning before the rest of the Malchut was taken into Galut. Do you remember this? Yeah, no, when does Koresh come to power? In 538. How long is Daniel then? Which means that he's around till 537. So now it's 597. How long is Daniel? 60 years. How old is he now? Anywhere, we said between 5 and 13, which means that he's going to be on the job for a long time. Why does the author tell us this now? Oh, by the way, you should know that he's going to be on the job for the next 60 years. Because what did it just tell us?
He's good.
He's really good at it. And his brilliance won't just be recognized by Nebuchadnezzar, it'll be recognized by everyone. So you don't want to let him go. Right? Just as an example, the Tsar, the head of the Bank of Israel, the Magid Bank Israel, his name is Professor Yaakov Frenkel. Mm-hmm. Anyone know? Brilliant, brilliant man. How has the Israeli economy been doing under him as the president? Great. And so he announced, though, that he's retiring. But, and what did Netanyahu suggest to him after he announced? Instead, you'll be like the Tsar HaUtsar, right? Basically, is any government going to be silly enough to let Frankel go? No, right? Because he's just brilliant. He's brilliant. He's originally from Australia. Any Australians? No. And basically, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant man, and certainly helpful to the economy. So no government, even though he's going to be there for a while, we'll see how different kings relate to him, but basically he's going to be on the advisory board for everyone. So now we continue. And last idea here, And that is the, again, the fact that here it worked out for them that they should be separate, that they shouldn't eat any of the food here. Note that this comes fine. Can anyone tell me, by the way, how Megillat Esther is a little built off of this? The idea of Daniel, who wouldn't eat Patpak HaMelech, and he wouldn't drink the king's wine. So Esther will do something similar. Hazal say she's doing it to compensate for what?
The Mishteh.
The Mishteh, what did they do? At the Mishteh there, the Jews actually did eat and drink the wine, meaning the authors of Megillat Esther are trying to say, shame on them, that they know about Daniel, and what did they do? Very nice. That not only did they not put chumrot upon themselves, but they willingly exceeded themselves in food and wine, leading the participants into, again, as you know, the inevitable outcome over here. And that's why Rabbi Yishmael learns, there's also a reference to forbidden foods because this can dull a person's heart. And at the juxtaposition then of the psukim tells us that because these young children did not defile themselves with forbidden foods, implying that those who do defile themselves, again, those because they didn't defile themselves, they were so smart. What does that imply? That the ones who ate the defiled foods, what happened to them? It dulled their hearts and their minds. Right? Something that Chazal indeed interpret when it comes to the non-kosher food laws. Okay, we're ready for Perek Bet. Notice that starting Perek Bet, we already are going to have Aramaic. So, I just realized I Xeroxed the whole Daniel for you, and I forgot to bring them today. Okay, how many of you have a Hebrew English? Excellent. Anyone with a NJPS Hebrew English? Sorry? You tell me. So now, or I'll just tell you. Is that okay? Here we go. Bishnat shtayim l'malchut Nebuchadnezzar, chalam Nebuchadnezzar chalomot. So we'll start with this, and we'll see how far we get, also with the Aramaic. But not to worry, Bezrat Hashem, starting next week, you're going to have the Aramaic. I'm going to ask you, am I allowed to give you a Pesach assignment as like a nice learning goal?
Yeah.
Excellent. So you're going to learn through Sefer Daniel. Is that okay? And this way, it won't take you so long. I'm serious. If you learn like half a parak a day, no, you'll need half a parak a day during your vacation. You'll come back really knowing Sefer Daniel well. Is that okay? And then we can really, again, understand and discuss the various issues that are presented here. Firstly, already now, to answer Rina's question, why do we switch to Aramaic? Because we're switching perspective. Now we're going to talk about how Daniel is going to relate directly to the king, to Nebuchadnezzar. In which case, if he's relating directly to him, what language is going to be spoken? Aramaic. This is where we're going to begin to hear.
The Torah when they dropped the parah.
Very nice. So here, we're going to see that Nebuchadnezzar responds, meaning to a certain degree, it's also trying to show you how there really is a great deal of assimilation here. And I agree with Rina that it's not just Nebuchadnezzar who's going to read this parak, it's also Daniel's peers. Knowing that Daniel's peers and his contemporaries are going to be reading this, what's the easier language? It's like putting something in English today for you, even if it does have a religious nature. Right? It shouldn't be that way, though. Meretz Hashem, after Shavuot Lumi, Rina, you're going to know Hebrew so well, you're going to always pick up the Hebrew Tanakh without any translation, that is Meretz Hashem. Okay, here we go. What does this remind you of, by the way? B'shnat shtayim l'malchut Nebuchadnezzar, so we already said it can't be Malchut Nebuchadnezzar, because Malchut Nebuchadnezzar technically began in 605 BCE. Is Daniel going to be in front of Nebuchadnezzar in 603 BCE?
No.
No, so it must be the second year of Daniel standing in front of Nebuchadnezzar as king. Do you see that? So we already discussed. Daniel came sometime between, you saw, probably 600 to 597 BCE. Let's say his training was over in 597 BCE. He's already been serving in front of the king for 3 years, so it's 596 BCE, exactly 10 years before the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Everyone see how I got to that number? Okay. So now, Nebuchadnezzar had chalam Nebuchadnezzar chalomot. What do we already hear? There was more than one dream. Vatitpa'im rucho. What does that mean? Vatitpa'im, pa'am, pa'munim. So, it's almost as if his spirit was ringing like a bell. Meaning, what does that mean? It was alarming. Ushnato niyata alav. So what happened? Because he kept on waking up from the dream, what would happen to him? How did you all sleep last night? Okay, who didn't sleep well? What does it mean that you didn't sleep well?
You don't fall asleep.
I kept like waking up tossing and turning. It's really hot.
It was very hot, so you were tossing and turning. Right, so again, to not sleep well means that you keep on waking up. How do you feel today? That's exactly right. Meaning, and that's exactly what happens to Nebuchadnezzar here as well. Ushnato ni'a'alav. He's not getting any good night's sleep, which means that what type of dreams are these? These are very repetitive dreams that he's having. And he would walk around like a zombie all day. Right, who does he remind you of?
Tara.
Excellent in his dreams. Vayamar melchel crow, lachartumim, v'la'ashafim, v'la'mechashvim, v'la'kasvim. So note this, as we said, the smartest scientists are called the Khartoumim. Next you have the Ashafim. They're in charge of like the mystical magic. Then you have Mechashvim. What's a Mechashif? Someone who can create magic. Can anyone tell me what's the difference between an Ashaf and a Mechashif? An Ashaf is someone who actually controls it. Who can, for example, talk to a snake. Do you see that? And versus a Mechashif does what? Like a magician. Right? What does a magician do?
Makes it appear.
Very nice. Makes it appear as if that's like mechashek versus ashaf. You see that? He activates something. Mechashek v'la chasim. And then he basically opens it up for the chasim. All the Chaldeans. Okay, all the smart people. Lagim l'melech halom utav. What did he want? Now, what keeps on happening to him? All it just says is chalam v'chanetzer chalamot v'titpa'im ucho. He's dreaming dreams and and it's disturbing him, and he is so tired. Ushnaton ya'alav. What Nebuchadnezzar, what's bothering him is that what happens apparently every day? He can't sleep. Why? Because he's having these dreams. But what happens to the dreams every morning? Were you dreaming about something last night, Kayla?
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Only like really, like something.
That's exactly it. Thank you. That's exactly what's going on with Nebuchadnezzar. We're going to prove it. He remembers like certain vague aspects that relate to.
Very frustrating.
Because if only you knew
your dream, then you know
what was really bothering you, perhaps. So he's thinking, okay, you guys have to figure it out. What is it that I've possibly been dreaming about that's disturbing me? And now if you're a psychologist, and this is going to be difficult, why?
You know, there's no basis.
Very nice. If I'm Freud, if you saw a red rose in your dream, I can start to analyze it, but you don't even remember the dream line. How am I going to figure out your dream? Truth is that if you're a king and you're having a dream and it's bothering you,
can you figure out more or less about what it is?
Tell me about your kingdom.
Very nice. Would that make sense?
Yeah.
We're going to say that's how Daniel interprets it. Is he so brilliant?
No.
We're going to try to figure out right now. Anna, so let's continue over here. He says, that's what's driving me nuts. I keep on dreaming a dream, and then it's disturbing to me, and I don't even know the dream. And that's how Daniel introduces the Aramaic. And by saying that, the rest of the dialogue takes place literally in Aramaic. Meaning, if you really want to understand what was going on, you have to have been there. If you're there, what language are they speaking?
Aramaic.
And from here on in, we're going to hear the Aramaic, and they're going to explain, again, exactly why they can't help Nebuchadnezzar. Why not? If you told us a dream, we can help you with the Pesher Devar. But you don't know the dream. With this, I'm going to ask you to take a look at the sheets that you have here. And this is what we're going to see right now. What is Daniel ultimately interpreting? And we're going to see that he's going to be interpreting the scene, and he's going to be interpreting dreams. So what are dreams? Are dreams prophecy? Meaning, is Daniel a Navi? Because what we're going to see is that the Sefer is not divided chronologically, even though, in order to make it clear for you pedagogically, we're going to learn it together chronologically. Is that okay? After you prepare it textually, I'm going to teach it to you a little bit out of order, in the order in which it happens. Daniel, the Sefer itself, is not going to be arranged chronologically, but rather thematically. Meaning, what you're going to see is that the first six prakim are going to talk about Daniel interpreting dreams for Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar and Koresh. Is that okay? The last six prakim are going to be Daniel's personal visions. Is that okay? Having nothing to do necessarily with the other ones. Now, this is going to be confusing because Perek Dalid, he's going to be talking to Belshazzar, and Perek Yud, he's talking in the third year of Belshazzar, but the prakim are in different places. Why? Because if you understand the structure, the first six prakim are his interpreting the dreams for others. The last six are his personal visions. In which case, it's one thing if he's interpreting the various kings' visions or dreams, because then what could I say? They're just having dreams. In which case, wait a second, his interpretation is really what? Perhaps somewhat Freudian. What do I mean by that? His interpretation is really an expression of what? Very nice, meaning very psychological. Do you see that? And in which case, I look at Daniel, and is he so great? No, meaning what does it mean that Hashem then, and he recognizes that his power is coming from God? Really, maybe it's from reading Freud on dreams. Right? Obviously, that's anachronistic, but okay, how about, though, what makes, and you'll see this in Parshanut, what allows the Parshanim to look at these dreams, not merely as dreams, are Daniel's visions. And it's hard to say that Daniel's visions are just psychological dreams, because there's a malach interpreting what's going on there, in which case we have to wonder, what really are all of these dreams? Are they and just some type of psychological visions, or are they really some level of nevuah? So, again, let me ask you this. Did Daniel experience nevuah? Well, the very fact that his visions are juxtaposed to the visions of the other kings, I can't just ask about Daniel. I have to ask, did Nebuchadnezzar experience nevuah? Was it really nevuah? And at first glance, again, some of us will say, yes, maybe it really was nevuah because it's going to predict what's going to happen. And Daniel is able to interpret this. Anything bother you about saying that it was nevuah?
Yeah,
it's nevuah.
Then why is it in Ketuvim? Right, if it's really nevuah. Right, so we're going to see that even the Rambam says Daniel experienced nevuah, but he's not a navi. Why? Very nice, because a navi, like Avraham Avinu, experienced nevuah, but he's not called a navi. Why not? Because he didn't have to deliver it to the people. Very nice, and we're going to see that Daniel didn't deliver these in public. So that's one explanation. The other is to say that Daniel didn't experience nevuah. What did he experience? Certain dreams / visions, and that ultimately aren't prophecy, but rather divine inspiration. And we already discussed this. What's divine inspiration? What's Ruach HaKodesh? How is Ruach HaKodesh different than nevuah?
Clarity.
Sorry?
Clarity.
Very nice. You're not on the same level, right? It's not as if you're actually communicating with God. Rather, you have a certain clarity of thoughts. Could psychological insights be considered divine inspiration? Yes, we're always that divine inspiration means that Hashem is inspiring you through your own talents. And that to be able to express something, to be able to see something, to be able to understand something. Right? Ruach HaKodesh is something that we believe and ultimately is inspired by Hashem, but where is the talent?
Yeah.
In us, this is really my expression. Do you see this?
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to see, and I'm going to ask you this each time. When we say, okay, who thinks this is Nebuchadnezzar, who thinks this is Ruach HaKodesh? Everyone support each one along the way, but we're going to begin by understanding a little bit of what Chazal say about both these ideas. So let's begin with, then even philosophically, how different, as you'll see here, Rishonei Machshavet Yisrael understood this. And now, this is, why should this be part of Jewish philosophy? Dreams, prophecy, divine inspiration. Why is it that Jewish philosophers, like Sefer Karim, was composed by Rabbi Yosef Albo? Why is Rabbi Yosef Albo going to talk about dreams and divine inspiration? Sorry?
What's Albo
mean? Very nice, because we're talking about a basic belief system. Do you really believe that Nebuchadnezzar could have Nebuah? And so what does that tell you about the capabilities of non-Jews? Things like this. By the way, can non-Jews experience Nebuah?
Yeah.
We have a good example. Bilam, Yafeh. Then maybe Paro and Mitzrayim, meaning not clear. Ulam Kfar Shar. Ki achar eilo hasagot, yifatach el adam sharachat amadriga acher, lo yisher ota adam, ki kamod shemisha lo ra'am ma'orot miyamav, im yisupar lo enyan hama'oraot, v'amarim lo yichal yisher behem klal. He says it's very difficult to explain these amorphous concepts because we haven't experienced them. Meaning, have we experienced nevuah? No. So, for example, right, this is a common philosophical concept. Let's say you were living in a world of darkness, meaning you, I don't know, chas v'shalom, there was some type of nuclear war, and you didn't know what the sun was. Right? Could I explain the sun to you? Julie, how would you explain the sun to someone who's never seen the sun? Explain the sun even, I don't know, to a blind person.
I mean, they don't really know what light is.
How can I explain any of this? Okay, it's a big ball of gas that provides for heat. Is that a good... I don't know about you. What picture do I have?
Like...
I picture like a fireball.
Yeah.
Right? Is that the sun?
Yeah.
Okay. No. Okay, try again. Right, you see this? Meaning, no matter what I do to describe it, think about this. Even as we're sitting in the room, right? This light is all
sun.
The sun. Like, how can I explain that there's a big force, right, billions of miles away, that does what?
Lights
that lights up the entire world, simultaneously provides reward, simultaneously is destroying the ozone layer, but ultimately, and now think about this, like, provides for life. You have any picture in your mind? Meaning, we're so used to this, he says. So too, again, you can't explain these amorphous concepts.
Can we have a Masora of, like, what
one? Right, nice, he says. So, you can't really explain at least. We'll look at this group thing of Valim, Kulosha, Lakeshara, Salis, and Yantam, Nukam, Shayel. Isn't that interesting? He says, just like, you can't really explain to a unit what conjugal relations are all about. Okay, there, he just says that. Here he's describing Ruach HaKodesh. He says, Nivuah, I can't really venture to because we haven't experienced it. He said that sometimes, every once in a while, I can't really explain it, but this phenomenon we do see, right, Ruach HaKodesh, where sometimes, like, someone will do something, and you wonder, like, where did that come from? For example, Mozart was, right, Amadeus Mozart, 3 years old, when they put him in front of the piano for the first time, and what happened?
He started playing.
And not like, you know, chopsticks. He started playing, he started composing music the first time he was put in front of the piano. Piano, what do you call that?
Normal.
Not normal, that's why we call that Ruach HaKodesh. Right? It's believed that, where did he get that inspiration from?
God.
Right? It must be from God. As a matter of fact, if you would ask someone, did anyone experience someone who, I don't know, possibly experienced Ruach HaKodesh? Like, all of a sudden, Rabbi Yosef Apel said, what will happen is that, and he'll be aroused in a way coming from his nature, but in a way that he never even knew was possible. He will speak brilliant words, or he'll start composing beautiful poetry to Hashem in a clear fashion that he didn't speak beforehand. And anyone who hears him is going to say,
"That's really
oh my, like, where did that come from? Like, how is he able to do that?" And he himself won't be able to explain to you. Mehechan balo hakol achavu. The aman kvar yiparsem biyuchar l'chol yitzron madrigato bazeh v'madriga hazot tikarei ruach hakodesh. Remember I told you that the scene that I most recall that reminded me of the way that Rabbi Abel is explaining ruach hakodesh is in the Scarlet Letter that most of you have read, right? And in the last thing that Dimsdale was writing, so all of a sudden, like, he's expressing himself, and the pen is moving, but he's looking at the words, and he's wondering, where are these words coming from? And he realizes that what's going on? I know, like, God is inspiring him. Right? Did that ever happen to anyone here? Or did it ever happen that you were asked to compose a speech, and you have no idea what you're going to say, and then, like, you get up, and what comes out? The most eloquent words you could possibly imagine. And I'm like, usually doesn't happen to us. Nachon? And we have dreams about it, right? But it doesn't necessarily happen. Or maybe in beautiful poetry, Chazal say, "Eh, sefer Tehillim." And where sefer Tehillim in Ketuvim versus Nevuah, in the Rav Sadia Gaon is going to say, "Yes, David wrote Tehillim, Nevuah HaNevuah." All the other questions are saying, "No, Ruach HaKodesh." But what was so amazing about David? He would sit down, and what would happen?
He would
just compose. Rav Hutner used to say that, yes, Beethoven, Mozart, and Ruach HaKodesh. Rashi had Ruach HaKodesh. Why? Why do we say that? What do we mean? Does Rashi know if Rashi had Ruach HaKodesh?
Mm-hmm.
No, what do we mean when we say that Rashi wrote his prayers through Ruach HaKodesh?
Well,
it's
not
like
his prayers. Right. It's so brilliant. Like, each time, it's so brilliant. And there isn't really a methodology to Rashi. Right? He just, you know, just says whatever he wants you to learn from that pasuk. Right? Something amazing over here. So that's our real Tzavo. In which case, help me out over here. Kinzamiel, what does it mean then? According to Rabbi Yosef Albo, Daniel Ben experienced Ruach HaKodesh. What does it mean that he experienced Ruach HaKodesh? He was able to see things that, and understand things that people weren't able to see. To a certain degree, can anyone appreciate how a psychologist can have Ruach HaKodesh? Mm-hmm. How?
It's like intuition more than Ruach
HaKodesh. Thank you. Right? A certain sense of intuition, but like, even he doesn't know. Right? Wait a second, I wasn't trained to think this way, and yet, and I'm so sure that...
Anyone that just like gives good advice and can just like pinpoint exactly...
That's why he says, Madrigot Shamot for Ruach HaKodesh. Right, that even Rabbi Abba would say, anyone who like just like gets it, like, oh my gosh, that was so on the mark. Right, that's a certain level of Ruach HaKodesh. In which case we believe, it wasn't because I'm so brilliant. I never went for a psychology degree, says Daniela was. Right? Again, for example, Yosef. Right? Same thing with Yosef and Mitzrayim. How did Yosef interpret the dreams? So he attributes it to Hashem. The truth is, I'm serious, Sarah Hashem and Sarah opens dreams. Do you think Freud could have interpreted as well?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And yet, why do we say, uh-huh,
he wouldn't
wow.
It's a
melopinieta
dabar. Freud went to college.
Very nice, Freud went to college. Freud studied hundreds and thousands of patients, and Yosef mm-hmm. knew it. Now, the truth is that Yosef like, picks up on certain cues, but even the interpretation of those cues, whether they be baskets, and therefore he understood that if birds are eating from the top, then when do birds eat?
Mm-hmm.
They don't eat fresh food that they eat when the birds come scouring down.
Right.
And the rotten meat, again, they're eating a carcass, he realizes. Now, you know what's going on in Yosef's interpretation?
Mm-hmm.
But he's picking up on the different cues over here. But even picking up on cues is... Ruach HaKodesh. Yes. Now let's take a look at the Rambam. The Rambam says as follows, "Ein yitzarach le'be'er ha'chalom mahu." He says that I'm not going to describe with nevuah what a chalom is, but I will tell you what a mar'eh is. For example, when a Navi experiences a vision, you know that it can be in the form of a chalom or a mar'eh. Anyone remember? Did you learn this? What's the difference between a chalom and a mar'eh? A chalom is a dream at night, a dream state, and a mar'eh is an alert state. How do Chazal interpret these two terms? Asbaklaria, mira is the mar'eh, versus asbaklaria, she'ina mira is the chalom. Very nice. We have shekhtu pram mar'eh nivu'ah. You can have a prophecy in the form of a mar'eh, but tikra gam king yah Hashem. V'hi gam king tikra machazeh, it's also called a vision. Ayom umacharid. This is very fearful when a Navi experiences this because he's up. Can you imagine in the middle of the day all of a sudden you get a vision? Freaky? Yeah. Commotion by Erbe Daniel. And notice, by the way, what is Rambam saying about Daniel? Amar Ed, like Daniel had. So what is he saying? Daniel experienced what? Ruach HaKodesh or Nevuah? Nevuah, says the Rambam. Because Daniel uses the term Beret, it's Amarev Abdullah, and he saw an amazing vision, but long Mishar Bikoach. I don't have any strength. And all of a sudden, again, my glory became destructive, meaning basically I lost control. And I felt that I had no strength left in me. So here basically we see that the Rambam believes that Daniel experienced Nevoah. And he says that in any state of Nevoah, what happens? The Navi is in like somewhat of a trance. And for those who've learned this, very nice, the Rambam explains in 4 Prakim earlier, he explains that the Navi's in like a seizure-like state. So if you're standing next to a Navi, who by the way was in this meditative and now seizure-like state, then what would you realize?
He's having
Nevuah right now. Let me keep my distance or maybe like catch it on YouTube. And notice though for the Navi himself, what happens to his physical sensations? He loses control because it's so cognitively focused, says the Rambam. He's not in control of his various senses. And eventually, this abundance, basically him being almost inundated with this spiritual, celestial image, and it will eventually translate itself into, obviously, a verbal expression. So according to the Rambam as well, it's not enough to experience Nevuah to be a Navi. What do you have to do? You have to be able to articulate it. And during this time, his creative forces are very much activated. And he'll do whatever he is told to do, again, in his mind. And V'astavua nevuah. Sometimes he says what happens is that the nevuah will begin in a vision form. He'll see a mare nevuah. And then, acharkin yirbeha retetahu. And what happens is he's experiencing the vision. What's retet? The shaking will continue. And the hipalut achazak. And the activity, meaning of his senses being dulled, that will also continue. And then the nevuah will come. What does that mean? Meaning that really, first he'll see a vision, and then he'll hear Hashem. Just like happened with Avram. Hayad yibor Hashem al Avram b'machase, and then b'tardei manach lal Avram achakach v'yomer l'Avram. That the words usually come after the vision, like after the Navi has contained the basic vision, then Hashem will come, and he'll be able to focus much more, not on the visual, but on the auditory faculties. Isn't this fascinating, according to the Rambam? But notice that who does the Rambam use as a proof for what a Mar'en Nevu'i is?
Daniel.
So according to the Rambam, Daniel experienced Nevu'ah. Again, why is he in Ketuvim and not in Sefer Nevu'ah? He experienced Nevu'ah, but he's not a Navi because he didn't deliver it to, again, he delivered it to Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar, but not to, and not the nation. That wasn't necessarily his tafkid. We continue now with the Gemara and the Sechah Brachot. Now, if we're already talking about how a dream can sometimes be an expression of prophecy, and other times it's an expression of Ruach HaKodesh, now we're going to see how Chazal understands a dream. Any of you learned the last Perek of Brachot? It's very freaky. Right? It talks about Shadim and, you know, different forces that are out there, which Rav Salvechik explains are like viruses and germs, but others take them literally to mean demons and their dreams. Really? So what? Notice this. Rav Elazar says, what's Rav Elazar's version of dreams? That dreams themselves aren't so important. What's important? How you interpret it. Right? So, ready? Gabriel and Kayla both had dreams last night. Do you remember any parts of your dream?
Remember, I needed to give some directions.
Okay, so you ready? I'm a dream interpreter. I'm going to say that means, Gabrielle, that you are headed off on a great direction in life. And part of what that means is that you're going to help give other people direction in life. How's that? Come on. And now, in a few years, you're going to tell me, Shani, you don't believe it. I've become a guidance counselor in school. I'm a Yoyitz Chinuchi in the local high school. And I'm right across from Shal Hind. And now, what will I say? I told you, right? It was really what? Your dream was?
It's a self-fulfilling
prophecy. Exactly, self-fulfilling prophecy. Now, why did that happen? Why did you become a guidance counselor? Not because of the dream, but because of how I interpreted the dream. Right? That's what it means. That the dream itself is really not so significant. It's the interpretation that people give. Means that the dream goes by what people say about it. Shenamar, v'yikasher v'chalan, u'kein ha'amar. U'kein ha'yas. Right, just like the Salamash and the Sarah-Ophim, they didn't say, just like we dreamt, that's what happened. They said, just like, that's interpreted. And they're freaked out because they don't know if it happened because of the dream. It seems that what made it happen?
Yeah,
it's a interpretation. So it's sort of like an ayin hara. That's what the way that people use ayin hara.
That's why you're not just like
Negatively. That's right. Then again, like a self-fulfilling prophecy. But this is notice even Saramash and Sarafim said the power was in the interpretation, not necessarily in the dream itself. Meaning what made it happen. So sometimes, what should you do if you have a scary dream?
Keep it to yourself.
Keep it to yourself. Why?
You don't want it to be self-fulfilling.
Because once it's interpreted, then that's what's going to happen. So that's
still like, what's you and my mom will say
that. Yes, no, psychologically, that's probably what they shared. Kenaya, Rava, Bahuda, Metrolay, Mei, Halamash, Nora, Ishka, Halamo, Patarias, our open money, Adam, Ravalas, our Mamich, Half, Bahan, our Halamo, Upitron, Halamo. And Ravalas says, from here we see that they really knew that Yosef's interpretation was right, because I'm sure you heard this before. That Sarah Mashkin dreamt his dream and the interpretation of Sarah Ophim's dream and vice versa. Amrav Yochanan, Ha Sheikh Menachal Hashtachim Vanachal Opasot Lutokpiv, Harizo Nebuah Kitana. Hishkin Menachal Opasot Lutokpiv. Someone who woke up in the morning and first thing opens out of his mouth, a pasuk, Chazalor, Harizo Nebuah Kitana. What is that? How many of you wake up with a pasuk on your mouth? Really well done. Means that you wake up and all of a sudden you say something like, I'm not even like a person can tell them. Like all of a sudden you'll say, but here, Harry's Rabbi Elbow, can you say Abraham?
All the time.
That's right. And that is that saying, like, why is that puzzle coming off your mind? It must be that. That's really some type of Nebuah. Right, that Hashem was giving you a message through that. I don't know what that would have been. Yeah, but Amar Yochanan, Shlosha Chalamot Mitkayim. There are three types of Chalamot that always, that are more significant. Let's put it that way. Chalom Shal Shacharit. That, why, can anyone tell me why is it that a dream that you dream early in the morning,
that's when you remember.
That's when you remember, and that's a strong dream. That's really REM sleep, that's supposed to REM sleep. I'm sure you learned this. The Chalom Shal Chalam Lo Chaviro, and if someone else had a dream about you, isn't that freaky?
Yeah.
And chalom shenitar b'tol chalom. What else is a strong dream? A dream that contains an interpretation inside of it. Chalom shenitar b'tol chalom. Right, a dream that has an interpretation within the dream.
You can even figure out why you dream. It always has to do with what you're talking about.
Is there usually something to it, by the way?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Why does Rina's mother make her share her dreams with her?
So that it doesn't spin
out. Okay, and usually, is it an expression of something? Yes. So notice, by the way, the Gemara here is talking about, it seems, what types of dreams? Like the dreams that you and I have, right? These are dreams.
Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly it. And notice then, Rav Elazar says, the dream itself isn't so important. What's important? And you interpret it, because that'll be something that happens.
Someone, like, in that fourth park. Like, not even a person that, like, I think about
and they're, like, right, right. Isn't this really happened to me? I'm sorry, this really, really happened to me. Last night, I dreamt about a person I haven't seen in 8 months. This morning, I'm walking to Matan to get my cheer, and she walked out.
Oh, that's weird.
That's
weird.
That's weird. I told her, and I looked at her, and I went, Shani, are you okay? No. Chaval, there's a phrase in Hebrew, Chaval Shalom Dibar Dolam Mashiach. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, why did I just dream about Mashiach last time? Because then, I just remembered. So then, through her talking, it made me figure out why I dreamt about her last night. Turns out that last year, 2 years ago, she had a 5-year-old son. Any of you better say that?
Oh, yeah.
My parents will tell you that she had a 5-year-old son, Alicia, who had, a sudden brain aneurysm and died. And sure enough, the year it was on Friday. And I knew it was around sometime in Adar. Because can you imagine? Can you imagine entering her that way? So I didn't realize why I dreamt about her until I saw her, right? Then, what's the first question you ask a woman? You haven't seen them in 8 months. How are you? And I really meant it. Like, how are you? Like, tell me about yourself. How are you? And she said, what do you mean by that? Turns out that there, I knew 8 months ago that she was coming to Israel just for the year, but I haven't seen her here. And so, do you mean like how my kids are just, you know, they're here just for the year in Israel? And just for one to realize, that's right, all these different like levels of a home. So now I'm a more, but then again, I'll be honest with you, part of the reason I was doing that is because I also realized that last week one of her students mentioned her name. Right, so that could also be another reason. I know, but isn't that tricky to actually meet that person then? The next day, okay, in any case, back to this. So lo and behold, Rabbi Elazar would say, yes, these are chalomot. Things that was in my subconscious. The truth is that maybe what happened, maybe I had seen her over the past 8 months, meaning maybe we were walking down, you know, maybe we had the clothes together, but I didn't see her. Why not? Because I wasn't really thinking about her, right? That could be, and that's exactly what Rabbi Elazar says, that certain things happen at certain times, or the interpretation that's going to be significant. So notice that this is very psychological in terms of dreams. So now we see that dreams can be very psychological. Not only that, another idea. What else is a powerful dream? Which is why being a mother, we want ourselves in a dream that repeats itself, what do you know? It's bothering you, right? There's something to it. Shinamar, but I'll make some note to hello. For example, where do we learn this from? Who had double dreams? Paro and Mitzrayim. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonatan, in marimu badan, ella mehore libo. And this is what I'd like to end with today, Anna, so that the Ezrat Hashem next week we're going to finish this, if that's okay, and then get straight back into the Aramaic. What does it mean? What really is a dream according to this? It's not Nebuah, it's not Ruach HaKodesh. What is it? It's super psychological. It's your own subconscious speaking, right? This is so, by the way, this is, I just want to keep this in mind, this is 1500 years before Freud. Is that okay?
No, I read it.
You read on dreams?
It was really interesting.
That's very interesting. I read it also. I keep thinking, like, we should have all figured this out.
Right? So, like, there's a wall between your conscious and your subconscious, and at night, like, the wall goes away, and so, like, your things
all... So the Hebrew Reili Bo, come forth.
That's not true, right?
No, it's true.
So real world inside is not true, I thought. What do we
mean? Oh, that there's an actual wall, right? People today, psychologists believe your subconscious is with you all the time. Right. But what do you do? Can you distract yourself from it? I just have to warn you. Yes, would you like to borrow it?
Yeah.
Excellent. Oh,